This podcast is part of the Shareable Podcast Network. Learn more at shareable.fm. This is Rogue. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. What if you could clone the best version of your thinking, bottle it up, and hand it to anyone who needed it, without ever being in the room? Hello, my fellow superhumans. I am Jeff Gibbard, broadcasting from the Shareable FM headquarters right here in sunny Philadelphia. And I am pumped to bring you another episode of Rogue, the only podcast where I don't just interview superheroes, I steal from them. Every episode, I bring on a guest who has a real-world superpower, mindset, a craft, or a way of being, and then I get close enough to break apart their unique ability so it can be understood, rebuilt, and stolen. I don't just ask questions. I go line by line through their operating system until it's yours for the taking. Listen to ignite your superhuman spark and leave powerful enough to change the world. Today, my guest is Jeff. I want you to tell me if I'm saying this right, but I believe it's Borshowa, or it could be Borshowa. You'll tell me.
The latter. Be lazy with it. It's Borshowa.
Borshowa. There we go. Yep. I should ask you that before I started recording, but thank you for your graciousness in my two attempts to make it work. How are you, sir? Welcome.
I am fantastic. And for the record, nobody can say my name right, so I am never going to correct, but it's everybody overemphasizes, just be lazy. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so glad we got a chance to do this. I really appreciated last week. It was last week or 2 weeks ago. I put out a call for like, hey, what kind of systems you got? And you were the only one who put together a like really comprehensive video and breakdown. And it was so awesome to see it. And it's so cool just to see how different people arrive at similar conclusions, especially as it relates to like systems. We'll geek out about this later, but there's a whole, not in the episode, but another time, but there's a whole article going around right now. It's catching a lot of people's attention by Karpathy about building a large language model wiki. And it's like this whole thing. And a lot of the things that, you know, he came up with, I was like, oh man, I'm already doing some of that in the Superman. It's very cool. So when I watched yours, I was like, oh, it's so cool. Jeff's doing a lot of the same things. So thanks for coming on. And I'm excited to talk about this topic with you because it's something that we both share. So let's start with this. Who are you? Tell people a little bit about who you are and what you do and all that. And then I'd love to know in your words, what is your superpower?
Love it. Well, so first and foremost, my name is Jeff Borshowa. To say who I am and what I do is a bit complicated because it depends on the day and the minute and the hour. But generally speaking, I help businesses find better ways to reach their existing clients. So I look for gold in the backyard. My favorite tools, I'm addicted to podcasting. I will take that, my microphone, to the grave with me, I think, and maybe beyond. And my other strange thing is I'm a systems thinker, and I love turning the systems that I discover and explore into practical tools for myself and then others. And one of the weird things I do is I learned that books are just puzzles to be assembled. So I write a book in about an hour or two. Dang. Now, the superpower, I have some weird ones, and I had to wrestle with it to figure out which one I'd share. But my favorite superpower, Jeff, is I love connecting great people with great people. Mm-hmm. So shout out to Monica for bringing you and I together.
Absolutely.
I see connections most people miss. They'll walk by it because I look for the common intersections, whereas I think most people are looking for how do I avoid a competitor or predator, things like that. I look for intersections. But my big one, and this is what we're probably going to cover the most, is I'm obsessed with turning my brain. I'm neurodiverse. My flavors are autistic and ADHD with a little dash of OCD in there for good measure. I resist any rigid linear structure tool, whatever it is that fences me in. So I've spent the last 3 years turning the Google workspace into my native home. So literally my entire life, my entire business is run through a Chrome tab with, you know, Google Drive, Google Docs, Google Sheets, Google Meets even. So I love creating systems that work for me. And like yourself, I show it to other people and they go, oh my God, how did you do that? And I'm like, well, it was easy. It just took me 3 years and I think you and I started nerding out, and it's like, okay, well, I started with Robert G. Allen getting things done, and then, you know, Tiago Forte's Building a Second Brain, and next thing I know, I'm reading translations of Swedish books, and it's like, doesn't everybody do that?
Apparently not, from what I've understood. I think it's one of the reasons why we immediately hit it off and connected. And, you know, all of the various interests that you and I have that are intersecting, the thing I'm really excited about is, in addition to that workspace that you shared in the video in the Superhero Institute, you also are an expert in being able to turn systems into GPTs that speak, think, and respond like clients to amplify their human genius. And I was really excited about the opportunity to sit and talk with you about that today and expand upon how one goes about doing that. Because, you know, I build a lot of these systems too. You know, we both have an interest. We're in different systems, but we're coming to similar conclusions. And when it comes to building out custom AIs, I think that there's a lot of different ways to think about it, but there are some kind of common overlaps there. And I think what I'd like to get to today is to try and unpack the way you think about things so that the people that are listening can think about it in similar ways. Because there's telling people what to do, which sure, you can give them a rote recipe and they can follow it. But then when the variables change, it becomes difficult. So what I want to do with you is understand your method of approach to these sorts of situations, how you interface with clients, how you think about it, what you're looking for, all that sort of good stuff. So on this episode, I'm going to steal that superpower from you. We're going to do it through conversation. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions about things. And before we get into how it actually works, I like to start with just having like a moment of like sober reflection on things, which is that any superpower can be used for ill-gotten gains and such. And you know, I'm assuming we probably also share the very strong sensitivity to injustice. So I guess I want to say, like, you know, thinking about the skill that we're going to unpack today about using GPTs and custom AI to help you do things, what's the downside? What's the dark potential path it could take people down? What's the dark potential path that someone could use it for the wrong reasons?
And, you know, honestly, Jeff, my wife thinks I'm crazy, but before I build anything, there's always a kill switch. It's like, I will spend months building a kill switch and then something will try to get around it. And I'm like, back in the pen. So I am I'm a deep, deep empath. And the thought that one of my creations would do harm, it is something keeps me awake at night. So I put a lot of guardrails and a lot of caveats and conditions in. But let's talk about the ideal client profile as a concept. It could very easily be manipulated and used for evil. And this is the thing that I hesitate to share this even with people, because sometimes they go, ooh, I hadn't thought of that. But the reality is, human beings, at the heart of it, we are very primitive ancient lizard brains, and there's certain triggers that make us compliant. And so when I build my stuff, I build it with empathy and love for the client. If you take out the love piece, it could easily turn into a manipulative piece. So I'm going to say this, and I hope nobody throws things at me.
Buy my book, everyone.
Yeah, I'm with you. The secret, you know, it sounds harsh or weird, but the secret ingredient truly is love. I build things for my boys, and I want the world to be a better place. But if you look at religion, it's not religion that's good or bad. It's how religion is applied. If you could use it to help people and heal them, it's good. If you use it to manipulate them and extract from them, it's bad. I think what we're going to see, and I'm seeing, is that cyber criminals are getting better and better and better at understanding our human motivations. There are things which, once we apply them, free will almost goes out the window. So I'm always cautious who I share these things with. And I'll give you 95%, but there's about 5% that I'll share off the recording, because it's the shit that would make the world go crazy if it got out there. So sorry, that's
no, all good, all good. So I think the anyone who spent any time in the last 3 years on the internet or longer knows that it can be a very challenging place to be. It can be very toxic. There's lots of things. And now you just add in very human sounding like things at scale that can manipulate and sway conversations. So there's a lot of ways that obviously AI tools and custom AI tools in general can be geared towards really nefarious means. And I think it's both profoundly simple and profoundly complex to say that love is the answer, or that, like, you know, having the right motivation going into it is the answer. And so we can't really safeguard within this conversation against people using what we're about to go through and building custom GPTs for that. But what we can say is that the way that you're approaching it, what helps to make it the sort of thing that is valuable and that tries as best as it can, I'd imagine, to reduce harm and make the world a better place, starts with a way of thinking about not just the tool that you're building or the system that you're structuring, but also the end user and the people that it's going to impact down the line. So I think that that's kind of just the lay of the land, the foundation. Pivoting from that, though, into now let's say that we're, now that's out of the way, let's just take best case scenario. So you do this kind of thing where you're building custom AIs, you do it with clients, you do it for yourself, it's useful. Before we get into how and kind of specifics of what necessarily, what exactly is the feeling that maybe clients get or that you've gotten when you really build something that is remarkably useful and valuable? Like, what does the superpower wind up feeling like when you have that moment of accomplishment where you're like, holy, I did it. I built this thing and it's incredibly useful and it's like not horrible. And it's you know what I mean? All that, like what is that kind of experience like? What goes into it, and kind of paint a picture for us about it?
Yeah. I think the word I'm circling is euphoria. You know, it is, and again, I can't describe it to somebody who's never done this, but I think you'll get it. It is like touching the divine, and it is like, you know, seeing your Mona Lisa on the wall. There's so many things that come at it, but to me, it's just like, I literally create these things as an extension of me. So when I see what they can do, I am quite proud of them, but I'm playful with them because I'm not all serious. I'm not that corporate stuffy guy. So to me, it is the joy of discovering a new toy. And then, you know, the next thing is, okay, let's sober up a little here and poke and prod it and see if we can break it. But I always take a moment just to enjoy the joy of creation. And, you know, you can kind of feel that superpower. It's like, you know, the Big Bang billions of years ago, to be there when the entire universe was created. I'm not going to lie, it's a bit addictive. So,
yeah. So the reason I asked that question, I want to kind of use this as the way to get us into it, which is that I too, when I have built amazing things, feel this overwhelming sense of like joy and accomplishment, because when you build a very complex system and it comes to life and it works, it is an accomplishment that I liken a little bit to like when you hear a symphony or an orchestra playing together in harmony and everything's just working for that entire piece. It's kind of remarkable, and it kind of reverberates in you in that way that you feel. And the reason I say that is because I think what we're going to cover, what I'm going to try and pull out of you and help people understand in building this, is how that is so different than just a single instrument on stage playing. And how most of what I think people use AI for, and I have a presentation coming out called Rise of the Machines, where I go through 10 levels of AI usage. And I think at the very first level, you have people pull out ChatGPT, they ask it a question, it talks back, and they go, oh my God, it's magic and it's incredible, and I use AI, right?
Witchcraft.
And I think that the gap between that and what we're going to talk about of building customized systems that extend a function of you and that allow you to truly amplify and grow what you're capable of, those are very far apart.
Yes.
So I want to then, let's scale it back. Let's get to that point by starting at the beginning. You probably started with AI same way that we all did, which is that ChatGPT came out and you're like, oh my God, amazing. And then new things came out and you tried it and you tried it and you tried it and you tried new things and began thinking about it. Give me a step-by-step. Take me through kind of how you got from building. Give me an example, first of all, I'd say about like, what do you mean by a system that extends you? Give me some examples of like, what are we going to talk about? Like, we help people sure. build here?
Well, first and foremost, this will get meta very quickly, but I build systems to create systems. Mm-hmm. So that was, to me, I'm good at building systems, but when you put on the robotic exoskeleton and all of a sudden Jarvis comes online, my systems start helping me build the next system. Each generation, and by the way, I deeply resonate with Tony Stark. I would love to be the billionaire who has time to just sit and play, and I really want all of his toys and tech.
Yeah, but, obviously.
You know, I will tear apart a perfectly good model just because I think it can be better. Mm-hmm. Now, the dark side of that superpower, by the way, is I can create 47 versions of one thing, or maybe I should create version two and then go build something else. So mm-hmm. My biggest superpower was building the systems to help me build systems. The other thing I've done is I'm very good at the written word. I love to write. I am literally colorblind and I am blind to visuals. I don't care about the cover of a book. I can get AI to create the first draft at least so that I've got something to say, I like this, do more of that. Mm-hmm. So it's always, and this is, I think, something I rant about a lot. I'm good at certain things. I use AI to make those things better or to round off some of the rough edges, but I will never, ever use AI to do things I don't know anything about. Mm-hmm. So that's my kryptonite, if you will, is I will never use it. You know, I'm not going to use it to study medicine and all of a sudden say I'm a doctor. Not that anybody ever would or should, but I know marketing, I know sales, I know operations, I know systems. Everything I do is in those four circles.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this part. So we've got systems that build systems, and you're good at thinking in systems and building systems. So let's stick with systems for a second here, because I think we could geek out on that, you and I, but not everybody geeks out on that. Not everybody is a systems thinker. And so I want to get back into easy mode for a second here,
yes.
Which is, I think there are some people who are born naturally seeing in systems, the connections between things. And then there are people who struggle with that in the same way that the people who are prone to thinking in systems have a hard time seeing things in isolation, right? So let's take that as sort of like there's an element of you just have that or you don't, right? But then there's also a sense where like you can start to see something could happen and you can start to see patterns where you hadn't before, right? Like you see something and now you see the connection between things and all of a sudden, all of a sudden now you have a bigger picture. And then there's the idea of like, even if you can't see the systems or if it's difficult for you, you can still train to better be able to understand how to think in systems. And in my experience of building things with AI, you simply must think and understand how things connect. Else it becomes very difficult to know how it's going to work and where it could potentially fail and how it can fix itself. And so it's interesting that you're image blind, because I do most of my stuff by like drawing pictures of stuff. Like it's all just graphs of flow charts of information. So I'm curious, this is probably useful that you don't think in that same way. When you're putting together a system, you're trying to think about something to solve a problem for someone. You start talking to a client. What's your starting point of figuring out how to help them using a system? And then as you're piecing it together, try to imagine for a moment that you can't take for granted that someone can think in systems, that someone can't naturally just see, oh, well, it's obvious this connects to this. And I get how difficult that is. But I'm on this side of the mic and I get to ask you to try and do it.
Absolutely.
So take us through that part. You know, let's say I'm a client of yours and I'm looking to save some time in my world. You know, I spend too much time on my email. When I want to put out a newsletter or blog post, I find I take too much time editing or obsessing over words, whatever it might be, right? Maybe I spend too much time when I have to do sales activities or outreach. I spend too much time prospecting and never reaching out. Talk to me through how you approach a problem or how to solve a problem for someone with sort of the first step, the first thing you're thinking about, and then how you go about that process in more of a sequence way than a system way.
I love it. And for what it's worth, I believe you can learn to see systems, but until you do, it's like trying to describe the taste of a lemon to somebody who's never experienced it. It's hard to do until you see it. Mm-hmm. I'm now to the point, and, you know, I'll use the Matrix metaphor. You know, they have the bullet scenes where he can see the bullets and dodge between them. I literally see the spaces and the gaps and things between things. So that's where I start, and I will make sense of that, I promise. But what I actually do, which is very, very counterintuitive, and believe it or not, it's stupidly simple. I shouldn't say this to the world of tech, but I live and breathe with Post-it notes and markers. Mm-hmm. So whatever is going on, I will sit down with my clients, their team, and I always bring in all the people that are involved. Again, we usually do it on Zoom. I'm not looking for anything other than what does finished look like? So how do we know we've reached the finish line? And then I ask questions about what pisses you off as you're trying to get there. And the funny thing is, Jeff, most people will tell you exactly every rough spot that's driving them nuts, but they forget all the smooth spots. So what I do first is I will map it out. And the reason I use Post-its, give me a blank wall. I'll put it in sequence and then say, oh, well, you just said you do this. So we move it around. But basically, the first thing is I figure out what finished looks like. Then I figure out what the friction points are. And then from there, I'll work forward and say, okay, what are you doing now? So I kind of come at it from, I document what is, I document what should be. And then once we've mapped it out on the wall, usually the gaps are obvious to everyone from the Post-it notes. So words I look for, which are very helpful, anytime you're talking about systems or setting something up, the words and or the word or, those are where you're going to trip every time. So and means an assumed decision that hasn't been made, whereas or is a decision that needs to be made. So if you've got a line in your end result that says do this and that, that and is where you break that into two pieces, not because... The number one problem with systems is everybody overcrumps it so it looks like a one sentence, but really it should be 10 bullet points.
Mm-hmm. I also think I look for if thens a lot. I look for like if this happens, then that happens. And that's usually followed by and this or this. And that's kind of like, and I like that despite the fact that our methods are different in some ways, they're also, I think, very similar, because I would go on a whiteboard and I just draw boxes and I write words on the boxes instead of using Post-its. But it's a similar idea of like what we're looking for is to see it. And we're giving people a visual anchor to walk through it and talk through it, focusing first on what it is that they are having an emotion, a negative emotional reaction to, of the things that are friction to getting to where they want to go. So I like this as a starting point. I like this a lot. Emotion in the journey, clearly defined endpoint, seeing it, and or if thens. Got that.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
And by the way, I love the people that show up like this. Those are my, you know, it's like whatever that is, that's where I need to dig deep.
For the listeners, Jeff is crossing his arms in like a
scowling.
Scowly sort of look. No, absolutely. Those are often the biggest opportunity, because they can be a major impediment, but if you can turn them around and they're your best friends because you're helping them fix whatever that thing is that they're frustrated or they think is hopeless. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Let me ask you this, though.
For what it's worth, Jeff, those are your champions. They will carry you off the finish line long after everybody else got bored and moved on.
Yep. So the excited people, you can cross their arms, motivation might wane, but those who you can turn, ooh, so good.
Yeah.
What about, so you were talking about the stuff that people can articulate, the things that frustrate them. They forget oftentimes the things that are smooth. What do you do with... You're good with the written word and you've been building systems, so you're comfortable in being able to troubleshoot as you're building a thing. What do you do with people who have a difficult time articulating what the things that they would have trouble putting into a system, such as like how do you make a judgment call on this? The and the ors, right? Or the yeah. instincts, the things that they might they just know the answer, right? Even this, the question we're talking about with thinking in systems, it's like, how do you do this thing where you can see bullet time and then tell people, well, you just see the bullet time, right? It doesn't work like that. So what do you do with the parts of this kind of a process where it's difficult to articulate it?
Yeah.
And I think what also happens in that same conversation is what happens when you get overlapping or conflicting information from different people on the team as you're building this.
Awesome. And for the record, this is where I usually get pushback because people don't believe it works, but it does. So first things first, whatever the processes we're working on, I have somebody, and if we're going to do it, we might as well get the top team person doing it. I'll have them walk through start to finish that thing, whatever that thing is that we're documenting. And I will ask them to walk through it. And I record them, whether it's, you know, if it's on a computer, I just record them on screen. And I'll ask them to talk themselves through it. Now, between you and me, that always comes out. It's gibberish and garbage half the time because nobody actually thinks step one, this, step two, that. You know, we're not airline pilots. But people always go, oh, I forgot to say do this, or oh, I forgot to tell you. And one of the things I look for is people make assumptions. They'll open software and they don't tell you where it is or what it is. So what I do is I have them record it start to finish. And I'm recording the best on the team doing it because I want the best as the model. And then what I'll do is I'll transcribe that. And the first round will either draw a rough, you know, depends on the team. We'll draw a rough decision tree sort of map. Or if they're more visual or, sorry, written, we'll give them a step-by-step checklist. But this is the part that I love, and this is where I get joy. I give it to the least competent person on the entire team. Ideally, somebody who's never done this stuff. Right. No.
Yeah,
we actually make it intentional. We'll say, you know, can we bring in, you know, if you're in marketing, let's bring in somebody from sales. So there's no shame attached with, oh, you're the team dummy. We're going to get you to do this.
That makes sense. You're bringing in someone who just doesn't have the experience to see if somebody without any previous prior context or knowledge could come in and actually follow the instructions.
Yeah. So a friend of mine, and I'll borrow this, he calls it the reasonably intelligent intern. They understand the company. They don't understand the task. Mm-hmm. So the idea is, and this is where I love to play, because somebody says X and somebody writes Y, you know, you never know where you're going to end up. But basically, I and the expert, whoever recorded the stuff, we watch the person going through it. Now, I'm watching them for those frustrating moments. And when they're starting to get annoyed, the expert is watching for the, hey, why did you do that? And it's critical. So believe it or not, I have a process for testing processes. But the observation is there will be so many, institutional knowledge or assumptions or decisions that nobody's ever bothered to document. And it's fascinating to watch because of the people, it's usually the experts who's most agitated by the end because it was simple. Why can't you follow it? Well, you gave me a 97-point checklist, but you missed 90 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not done until that reasonably intelligent intern replicates the outcome. And we look at what are the metrics? How do we judge success? What does a finished look like? What does success look like? But at the end of the day, it's not done until that reasonably intelligent intern replicates it start to finish without the expert yammering in their ear saying, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. Now, between you and me, I record that as well because that's the stuff the expert didn't know they were an expert in. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
It does. So all of this work of working with the people and the thing that they're doing is being used in order to essentially generate an SOP that can be then used and translated into robot language for a better, a way of thinking about it. couple points here, I guess. One, would you say that taking apart this superpower that we're discussing right now, would you say that organizations and people that have spent some time documenting their processes, their SOPs, are in a significantly better place? Or do you think it's the sort of thing that just having access to the tools, maybe you could even skip some of those steps because the tools can come in and help you, or maybe they're going to redesign your process and make it even better just by you giving it a little recording of it. Like, where do you kind of drop in on the, you know, how much does documentation ahead of time wind up helping?
It's a huge advantage if people follow the processes. Now, this is the fundamental. I've seen many, many, many documented processes that nobody follows.
Yeah.
So the key, and I think this is where systems thinking and creating custom GPTs intersect. If you can clearly explain the process, you can clearly create the ChatGPT that'll follow it, the custom GPT. But if you're not clear on your process, it's really hard to get a good, consistent AI model working. So one of the things I would say to people, and I'm always about critical path. So I'm not going
to
document.
I was just about to get here with you. That was like literally, I was sitting here with my follow-up question to ask you, and I think it's functionally about critical path. So let me ask the question since I think we're going the same place.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to know how much is signal versus how much is noise in putting these things together, because you ask 10 people how they do it, you even ask the expert how they do it. It doesn't necessarily mean it is the best way, the critical path, the first principles, et cetera. And when people build custom GPTs, one of the things that I've seen is that one, people either put way too little information, or two, they put way too much information, which winds up confusing the custom AI about what it is it's supposed to do. And so I'm curious about how you think about what is the ideal amount of information, and how do you determine what is that, you know, 20% that generates 80% of the value versus what's going to actually wind up being counterintuitive and pulling things back, making it less useful. So how do you think about that? How do you approach it? What's your take on it?
All right. Well, first and foremost, you touched my heart with the Pareto principle, because I am obsessed. Now, I also am obsessed with the fractal nature of it. So I do the 20% within the 20% within the 20%. So I'm looking for the 1% that gives me 50% result. So somebody can do the math later. It's 0.8 to 51.2. But the aha moment is it's critical. So I am a huge fan of Stephen Covey and Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. The biggest takeaway I got from that book is that most people try to be efficient, which is getting things done right. Whereas if you're effective, you're doing the right things. So most people are trying to be efficient, which is a waste of time, because if you're not doing the right things, it doesn't matter that you're doing them efficiently. So I'm a big fan with effective. I scrape things off right at the beginning, and I'm optimizing the critical path. So my critical path is, how does somebody go from stranger to friend to client to paid to happy, referring, and loop? So every system I build, and this sounds a little weird, but I build it based on the customer journey and that stage in the life cycle they're going through at that moment. So everything I do, and this sounds a little metaphysical, but I promise it makes sense, is what's the next logical step I want my client to take, and how does this process guide them through?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a business, and this is where it's crazy, if you're busy doing marketing, but you don't have any sales, you're missing the sales piece. You're going to do a lot of activity. So you need to figure out transition from marketing to sales to operations. Now, a lot of businesses segregate those into different buckets. I look at it as one customer journey. So I'm not trying to move a client from marketing to sales to operations. I'm moving them from no awareness to awareness. So I'm helping the client actually make the steps. So every system I build has to somehow help the client move forward. Now, I always start with a big system and say, okay, here's our marketing. We're going to run Facebook ads or whatever it is. Spoiler alert, I never run Facebook ads. It's always some sort of networking activity. But we have that piece. And then we look at what's the handoff. And, you know, when you're dealing with sales, the inbound leads from a Facebook campaign have to be treated very differently than the friendly handoff from a client who made an introduction. So you're customizing the pieces to get to the point where the cash hits the bank. So if I need to, I'll always start with the bank account and work backwards and say, how did the money get here?
Yeah, because that's back to your point of kind of like what you do is what is the clearly defined endpoint, and then what are the pieces of friction along the way? So conceptually, I think we've really broken down the thinking that goes into it, how you approach it. I want to get really tactical with an example here of, because we promised talking about a custom AI, custom GPTs. Yep. They could be custom gems, whatever it is. Let's actually talk about what it is to build an actual custom anything, what that process looks like for maybe people who have never done it before. Because I think when we apply the principles you're talking about to it, it'll make a lot of sense why you can make it more effective by doing it the way you're saying it. But I want to get really tactical on what it is that you do. So Sure. Let's take GPT, since that's a, you know, still to this date, probably the most popular among all of them. There's this area inside of ChatGPT where you have a thing that says like my GPTs and you click that and you can go and you can create one. So, okay, let's start from here. We've got a brand new custom GPT. We know that we want to start with the end in mind. We've mapped it out. We put down a post-it note. We've identified some points of friction along the way. We've gotten some understanding of the emotion that's through that journey. We've mapped out kind of like what is whatever that thing that we're doing look like from an expert's point of view. We've distilled it down until we've seen how a reasonably intelligent intern might go through it. So we're pretty confident we've got a good SOP. We know what we're trying to get to. We know we're trying to solve for those friction points. Okay. What happens next? Because now I'm staring at a blank screen with a cursor.
Yeah.
And I've never done this before. What do I need? What do I need to assemble? What do I need to write? What do I need to think about to make this thing a thing?
So first things first, so I will, once we got the notes up and we agree and we've recorded and we've done a preliminary walkthrough with the intern, I will take the transcripts and I will feed it to ChatGPT and I will ask it to help me find friction points and say I'm optimizing, because one of the things AI does really well is, you know, somebody might say upload video to YouTube. Okay, well, that's great if you know what YouTube is and how and blah, blah, blah. I will say, can you fill in from YouTube's site, fill in the pieces? Mm-hmm. And it'll actually go to the help desk and find whatever document knowledge base they have. And it'll give you YouTube's most recent steps on how to upload to YouTube. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're getting granular. So I make sure that, and again, this is very old school, but you know, until the post-it notes are perfect, until the system is perfect, if we can't walk somebody through it, I don't start building.
Can I ask you a question about that? Because I think this is, so I see into that and I have an understanding having built some of these things of kind of what you mean, but I think that there, I want to flag something. You're a brand new person. You've never done this before. You send that into ChatGPT. You've got the whole steps. It spits back, here's how you upload whatever. We're building a custom GPT, assuming that it's going to go and take the video that we give it or whatever, and it's going to go to YouTube and upload. And there's certain places that these AIs just can't really go, especially for the novice who's not delving into like MCPs and Zapier setups and things like that. But like a normal person who's setting this up for the first time, there's just a hard cutoff of what this AI is capable of doing. And so how do you adjust for that for the person listening who's trying to steal your superpower of building something useful, but doesn't necessarily know where the cutoffs are? Is it at this stage where you say, I want you to flag, you know, ChatGPT, before we build this, I want you to flag everything in this process that you can do and can't do? Yeah. Is that like a good starting point maybe?
Yeah. And just to make it clear, I see AI as the robotic exoskeleton. So without the man in the suit, the AI is flimsy and it's a little unimpressive. So I'm very clear with my clients. I will not build something they don't know how to run. Mm-hmm. So what I do is if they have a team member who knows how to do the thing, then we build a custom GPT to help them do the thing better. So I put in a background and a backbone, and you know, we build in safety rails, which we'll talk about. But the key is somebody on their team has to look at it and say, no, that's not what we wanted. So if they can't do that, and by the way, I used to build, and then people would say, well, that's terrible. And I'd be like, well, how do you know? Well, we don't, it just smells wrong, or, you know, and it's just,
yeah.
But so one of the things I do as I'm building it, we're going to take the transcripts. We're looking for, so I always start with the end and I work backwards. So mm-hmm. I'll use my actual buzzwords because it makes sense and then we can digest. But I start with the end outcome, the output. And from there, I look at what does success look like? So I call those my quality metrics. You know, I'm looking at the KPIs. And then I also look at feedback. So how do I get feedback and from whom? So I'm building it backwards. And then based on the outputs and the feedback and the quality control, then we're going to back into the detailed steps that we've already got. And the last piece I do before I start building, so I spend a lot of time planning and mm-hmm. very little time building. An actual build takes me about 15 minutes. The plan takes me a few hours. So never rush the plan. If you rush the plan, you're going to get a bad outcome.
I'm 100% with you on that. So I want to, because I know we're also, I know you have to jump very soon.
Yeah.
So I want to lock in the final pieces of it and then read back to you what I've taken as breaking down your superpower here. Sure. So the planning is the bulk of it. The build is the smaller part of it. There's going to come a portion of it that will be human in the loop steps. And I think that has to be defined prior to actually building it. So I'd put that in the planning stage. In addition to mapping the whole journey and all of that, you also have to then potentially ask the tool you're using, hey, which parts of these can you do, which can't you? And then also know yourself, which parts do you want to review the work and intervene as the human in the loop? Once you have all of that, then you sit down and you begin to create this custom GPT or custom gem or whatever it is. What would you say are the critical components, the most essential parts of building one of these custom AIs, including only the most important parts, leaving out everything else, but like, and they don't have to be like, you don't have to delineate the words exactly, but what are the components that you are including into building the right type of instructions for this to work for you?
Yeah. So for what it's worth, they're almost like Lego pieces to me now. So I always say, what's the purpose? Why are we doing this?
Yep.
Then I'll explicitly say, here's the inputs. We do not start until we have these things checked off. So if you need, you know, Bob from corporate accounting to sign off or whatever it is, that's your gate. Nothing starts until the inputs are satisfied. So everything I build, one of the critical inputs is the ideal client profile. And then I list the detailed process steps. And the key, I think a lot of people miss this, is what can the human do? What does the AI do? And I always have an example of what the handoff between them looks like, so that the system knows what a good handoff looks like, both from the human side and from the AI side. And then we get into the feedback loop, and then we get into the quality control, and it's just making sure everything, all of our boxes are ticked. And then I explicitly state what the output is. So I am very obsessive about this. Every process has one or two primary inputs and one output. If you end up with and or at the output line, or you need 10 bullet points, that's 10 different systems. So the key is all of this needs to be as simple as you can. So I put the canonical process steps. Those go in your knowledge file, in the instruction space, where you can paste it in. anything more detailed, and I try to keep, I think the limit is 8,000 characters. I'm obsessive about hitting 7,990. I don't want to go over, but I don't want to go under. I give it the tone. I give it the direction. The stuff you want to be used repeatedly and consistently, i.e. your entire process, should be in that part you paste in. Now, your logic and why you do this and, you know, what everything else looks like, I put that in a knowledge file. And then I upload it as a markdown. So I use Google. I download my Google Docs to Markdown. And what I'll put in there is any background that they need, any expert categories that would guide them and make this better, any experts, and any best practices. So
solid, solid.
Think of the document as sort of the fluff that somebody knows what they're doing doesn't need to know, but a reasonably intelligent intern will go, tell me more about that.
Mm-hmm. So. Got it. Okay. So I'm gonna repeat back to you what I heard as your superpower. I'm gonna summarize how you go about this process. And so to go back to like, what is the promise of what we're after here? So what we talked about as being the promise of the show is basically like, here's how to clone your brain. And that could be both as an individual or as an organization. So how do we do that? Okay. So that's what we're after. Here's what I've got, based upon what I've heard from you. One, you have to start by seeing it. You have to visualize whatever this thing is. You got to get it out and bring all the people who are involved into the same space so you can look at it and be on the same page about looking at it. And that, I think what we've delineated here is that some people, when they're building it for themselves, can see it in their mind. That's great. On paper is also great. Get it out, be able to look at it so that you can see those spaces in between instead of having to develop the capability to see the space in between systems. So first part, you got to see it. Second, the first part of that visualization is you got to define the endpoint very, very clearly. And then you're going to go backwards and look for the entire journey from the beginning to that clear endpoint about where are those points of friction, where are the points where there are emotional reactions to things, frustration, elation. But typically it's going to be focused first on the parts that are frustrating. And you're typically looking for four different words. You brought in and or, I offered if and then. So you're looking for if, then, and or places throughout this journey. And what you're really looking
for, Jeff, if I may, you're also looking for four-letter words.
Four-letter words?
Well, that's how people describe their pain.
Oh, so yes, yes. I think that's the part that comes before if, then, and, or, but it's the emotion in the journey. You're looking for the four-letter words, for sure.
Yeah, sorry.
So what we're doing here is we're trying to come up with the best articulation of the SOP, of the process that we possibly can, that we're trying to clone our brain for. And we're going to be bringing in the best expert or the best at it that we can. And we're going to pressure test that by bringing in someone who has very little contextual knowledge of a thing. So they get to be sort of our test subject for it. As we're going through that and as they're going through that, you're going to be refining it, and you're keying in and looking for the most important pieces and trying to, as best as you can, disregard all of those extra things, starting with only what is the kind of the critical path, the best 20% that yields the 80% of the results. Then you get to building it. Once you get to building it, or actually still in that planning phase, one last thing is you want to know what you do and what the AI does. So understand the roles and responsibilities about the human input and then the human output and the AI output and who's doing what when. Then you get to building. You start with purpose. What are we doing this for? What's the point of the whole thing? What are going to be those inputs? And those are the gates. Those are do not start unless. These are triggers. These are cannot go past unless we have these things, because that's what ultimately makes this thing run. Then once that's passed, we get into our detailed steps. Who's doing what between the human and the AI? We're defining where handoffs happen. We're defining what the feedback loop looks like. How do we go through revisions together? And then what is the quality control to make sure that the output that we're getting is what we're looking for? To make this work properly, we want to make sure that we're inputting the right knowledge as not just what we've described there as the instructions, but you're looking for what context and knowledge needs to be added as supplementary to those instructions to give those instructions context and depth. And then we want to define what is the one output. No ands, no ors. I guess and could work because that's still one output. But one, what is the
I hate and an or. They always bite me in the butt.
Right, so no and, no or, according to your superpower. Yeah. But one very clear output. Yeah. And that is how we go about building and cloning our own brain. We have to go through this process of getting it out of our brain, looking at it, defining all the pieces of it, figuring out what we can give to which people and robots, building the thing, testing the thing. What I miss?
Two things that I missed and I will add. So first of all, you always have the trigger. When do we do this activity? And the at the end with the outputs, I always add the what's next. Mm. So that's why I don't allow and or in my output. If you have multiple outputs, there's a next process. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the fundamental challenge for most brilliant people is breaking things down so that somebody can do some of it so that I can do the part I'm meant to do. Whereas most people say, well, I'm going to do the whole thing. I wouldn't ask a surgeon to clean the surgery room before we come in to have surgery. So you need to know where to chop the pieces up.
Yeah. And to that point, I want to say one thing that I really appreciate in your process. And it's given me pause to think more about this in my own is the clearly defined end point. Because one of the things that I struggle with as someone who sees the connections between things is that nothing's ever done. There's always more. There's always next. Nothing's ever really done. And there's always things that can be improved in this and that. And it becomes difficult sometimes to say, no, it's actually done. This phase, this part is done. And so I really appreciate having a very black and white sense of this is what complete looks like. So did I do a reasonably good job of capturing your superpower?
I think you did an excellent job. Now, full disclosure, Jeff, this in the hands of linear thinkers breaks them. I'm sorry. My superpower is not teaching linear thinkers how to be system thinkers. I don't do it.
Yep.
I make their heads explode. And then they next thing I know, they're chasing me with pitchforks and flames. You know, it's not pretty, but
yeah, it's understandable.
With neurodiverse and nonlinear thinkers, when they see this, and this, you're going to find this in people, the look of joy when they realize that this is how their brain works. Because I personally, if I can't see the context, I don't care. I don't want the detail. Give me the big picture and then I'll figure out the details. But most people, especially linear thinkers, step A, step B, step C, it's like, what am I building, IKEA furniture? I'm building a business.
I'm so curious about this. I really want to be able to take, I want to take your entire process and figure out how to actually deliver it to a different type of brain, because there's a secret, there's a key there. There's something there. I'm reasonably certain of it. But Jeff, I want to thank you for coming on to Rogue, letting me steal your superpower. That was very cool of you. I hope it wasn't too draining as it is with Rogue. Tell listeners and watchers how to find you when Gotham is in trouble. How can they find out where to work with you and what's going on with you?
Well, the obvious place is a bat signal on LinkedIn, but also in school. My website is pharosbusiness.com and always looking to meet, I don't care why we connect, but I look to meet nonlinear thinkers. And one way or another, we find a way to play together. So
love it. Love it. Well, I'll make sure that all of that is added to the show notes. And for all of our superpowered listeners, I hope you're not done growing and we'll come back for the next episode of Rogue, where I'll be talking to another superhero to learn about how to steal their superpowers. As a reminder, if you join the Superhero Institute, we have something called the Rogue Gallery, where every superpower, just like the one we talked about today, is broken down into a PDF that you can download and learn for yourself. This has been an episode with Jeff Borshua. I've been Jeff Gibbard. And until the next one, please keep going and doing your part to make a world that is kinder, safer, and more equitable. And I'll see you on the next one.